Harihi
Om.
Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 91. In the next two verses, 19 to 20, the Lord describes the result one will attain by following the rules and regulations of Bhakti Yoga. When one is fully qualified with all these transcendental attributes, and his consciousness is thus completely purified, he is immediately attracted simply by hearing my name, or hearing of my transcendental quality. As the chariot of air carries an aroma from its source and immediately catches the sense of smell, similarly, one who constantly engages in devotional service in Krishna consciousness can catch the Supreme Soul, who is equally present everywhere. 19 to 20. So if one is always performing these devotional activities with the proper consciousness, right, then you will be able to see the Lord everywhere. You just by hearing and chanting, you'll be immediately attracted. And you'll be able to perceive the Lord everywhere, right? Because you're looking at it in a different way, right? It's just like we're generally trained to look at what can we enjoy, right? So we look at a situation, and the first thing is what can I enjoy here? You know, whatever it may be. It may be more gross, it may be more subtle. You know, what can I take a picture of that'll be nice to show others? Where can I sit? Where can I get something to eat? You know, just where activities that I will find fun. So all that's happening is there, and they have to deal with all that. Right? So, but when you change the consciousness here, then because one is purified and in this state, then one is able to appreciate Krishna consciousness. Then, because it's the Lord that pervades everything, then one is going to see it in connection with the Lord. Right? And so it's not a dry thing. You know, just like when we look around and look for sense gratification, it's not dry to us. It's very personal. You know, it's about us, people we're with, you know, people, you know, we want to interact with. You know, we'll think, oh, that would be nice for this person, or this person would like to do this, or this is a great place, I should bring this person. Right? You know, all that kind of thing happens, right? So, the same way is then, you just see opportunities, how to serve Krishna, or the wonderfulness of Krishna, or anything like that. Because you see Krishna, you see the soul, but it's the person, right? So that's why I mentioned before, the meditation had to be on the person. And in being on the person, it had to be according to, the qualities of the person, right? The different parts of the body have qualities. So bringing out that's what you're trying to do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it takes on a very personal thing. From our point, then spiritual tends to be the concept is impersonal. You know? No, it's the most nice. You know, it's just like Moses looked pretty good, right? And he was there, he was going to become, you know, he was the Pharaoh's son, he was probably going to become the next person in line, so he's good looking, everybody liked him in the kingdom, he was, you know, had all the good qualities. But somehow or another, when he went up on the mountain, came back down, then he had this amazing pompadour that even Elvis would be afraid of wearing. You know, it was just so outrageous, you know, and then he has that look in his eye like, you know, he's always just, you know, someone's, you know, poking him with one of those, tasers or something, you know, that's, you know, saying so. But the thing is, no, it gets even better. If you think the material is nice, then it's so much nicer in the spiritual. So that's the difficulty. So we think that it's all the spiritual is something it doesn't have, because it's different from here, so it has to be really weird. You know? So someone who's spiritual always talks to it, you know, has these weird eyes and talks in this weird way and acts weird, and you know, then that's spiritual. Sorry? Yes, yeah, spontaneity. Yeah, you know, yeah. Like that. Yeah. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So the whole thing is being able to see the Lord everywhere. Then it just means all the opportunities in which one can be Krishna conscious. Right? All the opportunities, either seeing Krishna and every how he does things, how nice it is. If it's beautiful, why is it? Because Krishna's beautiful and he's arranged it. It's his hand that makes it beautiful. Like we see a painting. And then you think how great the artist is to make such beauty, to draw the emotions and feelings and the colors and the symmetry and all. But you look in nature and everywhere you look you see that. You know what I'm saying? If you just go into a natural environment that man hasn't been there, it doesn't matter what perspective, where you look from, it's always perfectly composed, perfectly balanced. Right? Man's been there, then you kind of have to move around a bit to, you know, not get the garbage cans in the picture or, you know, stuff like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so like that, you have to worry about it. But otherwise, Krishna does it perfectly. So that's why it's actually a higher level and it's a more pleasing level. And that's why one is able to stay on that level, because it is nicer. So it's not artificial. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's not like jumping on a trampoline or something. You know, you're up and then and then back down, you know, like that. No, it's yes.
It is not a description of pure devotional service. It is a description of pure attitude.
Though it's qualified with all these transcendental attributes and it's conscious. So the transcendental attributes means the proper... It's already mentioned that you have to follow the rules and regulations. So in other words, there is the situation and there's the attitude. Right? Because an attitude is only useful if it's applied.
Yes.
Right? You know, if you have the guy with attitude and there's no street, there's no punks, you know, then what's the point? You know what I'm saying? So the whole thing is this attitude has to be applied. So sambandha has to be applied. So knowledge, the attitude, the identity, all these things have to be applied. So he's explained the processes, he's explained various techniques and all that define the differences between the situations, and now that he's bringing out the most important is this attitude. So if it has that Krishna conscious attitude, that's what's going to make it successful. Because even though, like previously, we weren't discussing it much, but the point is that the acharyas, because they define here what's primary, what's secondary. So, you know, Krishna consciousness is primary, material life is secondary. Or, you know, your direct devotional activities of sadhana is primary, the indirect activities of one's day-to-day life is secondary. Does that make sense? You know, hearing the name primary, you know, that. So, but it just keeps going till it gets to the devotional attitude is actually the primary. And then you have the secondary, the support. So there's direct secondary, there's indirect act, you know, indirect, neutral, and in, you know, does that make sense? So you have all these different aspects. So Mother Jashoda, it's not about the house and what she looks like in that. It's her attitude that makes her Mother Jashoda. Right? Because then she comes as Sachimata, and so then, you know, is there a problem? No, because the same attitude comes. But the form changes, right? From being, you know, the kings of Vrindavan to being Brahmins in Mayapur. So they're simple. They live in their, you know, grass house and stuff like that. And so they don't have the 100-room palace like they have in Vrindavan. But the point is it's the same quality of service on the Brahminical, you know, level. You know, just that simplicity of that. While the other, they're Vaishyas, they're the kings of Vrindavan, so they have facility, so then they do it in that way. You know, it's not that they don't have facility, but it's very simple. Does that make sense? So So the primary thing is this transcendental attributes. That's the whole point. But it's not about the attributes itself. It's about wanting to please Krishna. Then these attributes become useful. Just like renunciation is useful if it's connected to Krishna. On its own, it's a nice quality, but it still will be a nice quality in the material world. Right? Well, if we connect it to Krishna, then it's something that can take us out of the material world. Right? Does that make sense? Is that okay? So you have to see that you need to understand just devotional service is superior to karma and jnana. Right? That's the first thing. Then, you know, devotional service then and karma and jnana only function because there is some bhakti in it. So bhakti is a superior position. Right? Then we're going to get into that the practices of bhakti. So how the yoga system works, what's the form of it, what's the sadhana of it. Right? Then we're going to get into then what's the proper, you know, attributes and attitude. Right? You know, what qualities you need to perform that yoga system. Because all it's doing is saying you sit there and, you know, push your nose and breathe and all that. And then you pull in the senses. But what qualities do you need to do that? Right? So then it breaks. But the point of that is that it will bring about pure devotional service. So the real thing is pure devotional service. That's supported by the proper attitude. That's supported by the proper activities. That's supported by the proper knowledge. So do you see we got all four here? Sankarshan Prajumna Adu. So now he's pointed out Aniruddha. Now the result is you'll be able to see the Lord everywhere. You'll always be absorbed in the Lord. Right? Now, well, so that means that right attitude is there. Right? So, and that is based on you have the right, activities that you perform.
Yes.
And you have the right knowledge, understanding the superiority of devotional service. So when I appreciate devotional service as superior, then that attitude is there to perform the activities properly that I get the result. So he's just followed this formula of explaining Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha and Vasudeva. Right? Because that's how things work. That's the mechanics of how things work. Right? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Right? The categories of it, what are the, what's working, that's Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana.
Yes.
But the mechanics of how Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana work, that's Sankarshan Prajumna Aniruddha and Vasudeva. Right? When you're looking at what energies are in play, then you have the Icha Kriya and the Jnana. Right? Means you're distinguishing, okay, you have the internal potency, the external potency, the jiva, but how does it function? Why is it functioning? We're replacing the Lord's desire with our desire. Right? And then we're replacing the jnana of that pure Vishuddha Sattva with ignorance. Right? And so then the activities then are going to be, you know, based on passion and ignorance here. And maybe the aspect of goodness, because someone is purified, one understands following the shastra, you get a better result. But until you understand Krishna consciousness, then it doesn't get into the transcendental manifestation of Icha Kriya and Jnana. Otherwise, it's the mundane. So therefore, it's the modes of nature. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
Always connected.
Yeah, so there's always these things, and depending what you're bringing out, you put it in different perspectives. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, verses 21 to 27. A devotee dealing with others. In verses 21 to 27, the Lord emphasizes that one cannot please him unless he recognizes his presence in all living entities. Right? Because he's mentioned the whole process of deity worship, how you worship him and all that. And all these sadhanas, but if you don't recognize the devotees, then you're not really going to please them, because then you remain on the neophyte platform. So that's one of the qualities of the neophyte, is the devotees aren't so important to him. Well, for the madhyama, they are. Right? He's kind, he makes friendship, he has respect. Right? You know, so while the neophyte expects everyone to be kind to me, everyone to respect me, and everyone to, you know, step forward to try to make me their friend. You know, is that, yeah. I am present in every living entity as the Supersoul. If someone neglects or disregards that Supersoul everywhere and engages himself in the worship of the deity in the temple, that is simply imitation. It's a start, right? So when we say it means that the position is we take up devotional service, technically we're just imitating the process of devotional service like they do in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? We're just imitating. We just see, okay, this is what you do, we try to do it. But if the intent is to come to pure devotion, then we don't categorize it as such as imitation. But it's only pointed out as imitation if somebody gets proud. They don't care about the devotees, they don't care about trying to see the Lord and everything. Then at that point it's brought up, then it's just imitation. Because in Braj they see Krishna in everything. Not as Paramatma, they see Bhagavan in everything. Because every situation in Vrindavan, they see it as an ideal situation to serve Krishna. So it's just depending upon how Yogamaya is arranging it, different situations, different devotees become prominent, and therefore the pastime moves in that way. There's not a square nanometer in Braj that is not connected with pleasing Krishna, because it's a manifestation of the Icha Shakti. So it's about pleasing Krishna. So everything, every leaf, every blade of grass is perfectly placed because it pleases Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah? So therefore, if one doesn't at least have that, if one's heard about it and one doesn't have the interest, saying that, then that's not very good. You know, oh, that's jnana. But then generally the person who says that is engaged in karma. You know, we're just being practical, right? It means moving material energy. That's karma. None of this theoretical stuff. But the point is seeing how it moves is what means. In other words, people who make inventions or come up with bodies of knowledge or something, what do they see that others don't see? Everybody's been looking at the same thing since time immemorial. They see something because they see what makes it work. It's presented as it's just somehow or another they stumbled upon. I mean, you have that. But the point is how many people found in the morning green stuff growing on a piece of bread? Right? Since whenever they came up with bread. Right? Does that make sense? Sinai, they had no problem with it because it was unleavened. They made it fresh. After that, the point is people came along with they had time, so there's leavening, so therefore you have. So they didn't make that. That means it was already going on then. And you're talking quite a bit B.C. at that point. You know? Somewhat B.C. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, just wondering if in the context I should say B.C.E. Or BT, no, I was going to say BTG, before that guy. Okay. So, but then they don't mind actually because he's Jewish, so you know, hey, you know, if one of their boys is worshipped by this other group, hey, cool, you know, at least they have some connection. Right? Like that. So, then, okay. Where do we get into? So it goes back. So that means that all this time, has there been no instance of a piece of bread being a little bit older, somehow or another, the environment's just right, and it turned green? That never happened before. Right? Okay. But did anybody see, here's medicine, here's, you know, something? No. Because the guy's working in medicine, so he sees these things. Right? Have apples not fallen on people's heads before? Right? And then somebody falls on Newton's head and then suddenly, you know, like that. Now, what about taking bath? Okay, I know, okay, if you go farther back in European history, that may be more of a rarity. But there were people taking bath, right? You know, I mean, the Greeks took bath, the Romans took bath. It was quite popular. I can't guarantee if the... you know, northern Germanic tribes and their bearskins ever took a bath like that. You know, who'd want to take a bath in the Baltic or in the Rhine? You know, like that. You know, it's just, Does that make sense? Whatever. So, but how many people, you know, had, you know, great epiphanies and jumped out of their bath and running down the street, you know, shouting Eureka? Right? Not many. Right? So that's the whole point, is that, what was the whole point? That's a great lead up to something you can't even remember. Yeah, they're seeing what is the principle behind what's going on in it. So there's something that they're seeing that's unique, and because of this, they're glorified. And then we say, this is what we're offering. You can see not only just some energies at work, but how God works and pervades everything and how the whole thing functions. And then somehow or another, that's not going to be great. You know, that doesn't make sense.
That's not enough speculation according to their standard.
It's not enough speculation, yes. But the thing is they don't understand the process of the mechanics of speculation, we use it probably more than most people. Your average devotee probably will use it as much as a general academic. There may be some professors that may do more than a general devotee, but then you have devotees who do more than them. You know? So, but the point is for them it's sense gratification. For the devotee, it's devotional service. He's thinking how to connect things to Krishna, how to see Krishna, how to please Krishna. So the mechanics of it are the same. But when it's not used to please Krishna, it's called speculation. And so, just like senses being engaged to serve Krishna, it's called bhakti. Not to serve Krishna is called sense gratification. So the whole point is they're interested in mental speculation and sense gratification, because it's about themselves. So that's why they get upset that it doesn't have enough substance, because it's not enough to feed their material desire. Does that make sense? But intellectually, it's like, how many professors could bend their heads around what we've been discussing for the last few months? You know, the fine details of that. Even psychologists can't deal with this level. They got fancy words and this and that put together in weird ways. But when you get down to fine points, then it doesn't work out. Right? Like that. It's like, we went to some program, there's this professor at a university, they're psychology professor. They invite their friends. They're more kind of like hanging out with their friends. One or two, the guys that took it seriously were the guys that looked like professors. You know, the guys with the wild look in their eye, the wild hair that's not combed, the wild outfits, like that. They saw something was here, right? So they could take it, but your ones that were kind of more, you know, the popular psychiatrists and did well with the students and all that, they couldn't catch what we were talking about. But the really eccentric ones that could really think, then they could see they ask all the questions and all that. Right there. So it's not like questions like, you know, but we say like this, and, you know, that's they doing that. It's like you're doing that. Well, how does this connect? How does that? It was actually, you know, for them it was inspired because the intelligence was used.
Yes.
You know, yes. Rather than you're just teaching a class. It was, and that was, we were just using basic stuff. We didn't even get into the stuff we got into this year on psychology. We were just using what we're using in the third year. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. You know, because we didn't get into polluted consciousness and how the difference between the chitta and the manas, those things we didn't get into. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's nothing for them. Because, see, it's that you have those who are actually thinkers. And they like to think about things. And they have those who just like to have fun. Right? There's those who want to know. There's those who think they know. Those are ones who want to have fun. And those who just, you know, it's a good paying job and they like doing it according to their nature. They're like the campus, because it's like, you know, you're 40, 50, 60 years old, but you can kind of be crazy like as if you're 20. You know, and it's cool. You know, and you hang out with that, so much energy, you know, like this and that. And so you have all kinds of things happening on the campus. And unfortunately, the ones that, means you can't really tell who will relate. So you get all variety. The ones that look, you know, more like the, you know, absent-minded professor, sometimes they can relate what we're doing more than anyone, sometimes less. It depends on whether there's that theistic aspect or atheistic. If they're atheistic, they really don't like what we're doing. Because they can see is that we can think on their level and it's logical, and they don't like that. They don't like theism should be logical. You know, atheism is logical. You know? So in other words, we would not be able to discuss this at Sorbonne. Right? They would not like it. Because it's not atheistic. It would freak them out that it's logical, things like this. Is that what somebody's doing? You know, so there is those. So there's all variety of intellectuals. But what he's talking about here is the aspect that when you come to conclusion, the fun is over. So for them, thinking is only to play with it, because conclusion means end. But for us, conclusion is where we start. We speculate then on the conclusion, how to apply it. In other words, we means the speculative process. We're not speculating, right? Means you start with shabda, and now we use the speculative process to analyze how to apply it into pratyaksha. So how to do that? We have to use logic. Okay, we see this point, we see A, we see B, we don't understand C, or we see A, we see C, we don't know what B is. So then you use the speculative process to see what's the connection between them and how it works. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the fun is over because then they have to surrender.
They have to surrender, yes, because it's not sense gratification. But if you have someone as an actual intellectual who's looking for answers, they're very inspired because now they come across something that actually is logical. Because anything else is not logical. They got fancy names, but it's not logical. Otherwise, why haven't they? Why in 3,000 years of the Western Academy, why haven't they come to some conclusions? Every 10 years, it's that we used to think like this, now we know. And then we're supposed to buy this year, every decade? You know? It gets old after a while. Okay, when you're 10, when you're 15, 20, okay, it's cool. But it's really weird when you're sitting there studying something that, you know, this is the absolute fact and this is the way it is. And then your father comes along and looks at it and goes, wow, when I was a kid, it was totally different. The things they're saying here are totally bogus. When he was a kid, that was the absolute fact. That was science. Anything else was nonsense. You know, and he's going, wow, okay, you know. So all it is they just, they come up with, they observe, they come up with their facts, they make fancy names for it so that no one else knows what they're talking about. And, you know, and then they can relate the things exactly, you know, like we use the Sanskrit terms, so they have their fancy terms, generally Latin, you know, and then like this, then life goes on. But the point is their means conclusion for them is the end, that's the beginning for us. Because they're trying to ascend, but if you get to conclusion, the process is over. We're starting from conclusion and descending. So they have a limit how much they can ascend, but we don't have a limit how much it can descend. Right? We can see time down to the, you know, the move over an atom. Like that. So that's not there, and it means that they have atomic time. But it's basically just the regular time, they've just broken it down. It's not connected really with the atoms. They call it atomic, but it's not connected with the atoms. Does that make sense? You know, so it's so much more scientific. So how far, how intellectual you are, you can take it that far. Right? And if you're not, you have the conclusion anyway. So then you just need to go enough to make it practical in your life. That's all. So that means everybody can be on the same page. But in the modern, note how many people can be on the same page?
One.
Always
one.
Yeah, well, one, yeah, of course. Well, two. If you look in the morning when you get up, there's always a second, you know, person that you can relate to and all that. Seven. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, offense creates restriction. Offense generally stems from disrespect to the great devotees. Though such devotees are difficult to see, many exist. In order to avoid offenses to them, one should pay respects to all living entities, thinking that the Lord is present in all of them. Without doing so, even worshipping the deity forms of the Lord will not give any results. So he's pointing out why you have to respect all living entities. Because if we're in a neophyte state, we don't know what is advanced.
Yes.
And so we will be disrespecting people who are. So if we're respectful to all living entities, then we'll be respectful to the great devotees. But it's also a symptom of not great advancement, because if you're advanced, you should be able to identify these devotees. But generally we think we are advanced, we already know. These guys are okay, the rest of them are schnooks. Right? You know, so that's the whole problem, is this pride. Since he is the Supreme Lord, Kapila then speaks in 6 verses somewhat angrily, out of affection to benefit his devotee who does not respect all beings. Right? Because he's basically pointing out strongly, you're not going to get a whole lot of benefit. He wants the devotee to get benefit. So this is not the, you know, on the mountain and, you know, having the thunderbolt in the hand and everybody down cowering and then the thunderbolt hits and there's little piles of dust. You know, this is not the thing. Or, you know, the earth opens up and everybody, along with the golden calf, falls inside. No, we're not talking that kind of jazz. You know what I'm saying? That's always fun. But, you know, we're talking about that there's benefit. Right? So he's talking here, Vaishnavas who actually know the Lord. So then it's a matter of correcting that. Right? If you don't know the Lord, then one has to mechanically purify. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. In these verses, disrespect, disregard, hatred, and criticism are forbidden. This person performs imitation worship of my deity forms. Because that's not real means I respect the Lord, I respect the devotees. Because the point is Krishna, it's about Krishna and the devotees. Let's say I'm in Braj, okay? Krishna's there. Who else is there? Devotees. So it's all about Krishna interacting with the devotees. Now we're here in this realm. Okay? We have the deity. And who's in his realm? The devotees. So we have to see. So now they're in various degrees of understanding of their devotion, but they're all devotees. So when we make distinction, and it's not in connection with Krishna consciousness and devotion, then that's not the spiritual platform. The spiritual is that here's the Lord, here's the devotees. Right? It's not sentimental. It's not like, you know, Prabhupada says, one pujari who, you know, is making chapatis and he's cooking them, and then a dog comes along and steals one, and he's running behind the dog saying, wait, you know, you forgot the ghee, yes. You know, because the dog is Narayan. You know, we're not talking this kind of sentiment. No, the potency of the Lord is there in the form of the dog, and the dog has particular nature, therefore they're not supposed to be stinging the chapatis. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's not sentimental like that. Because that immediately bewilders people, and they think, yes. Well, we're talking, the one we're talking here, the people go, well, what are you talking about? But the point is they're all devotees at different degrees. Someone's in Braj because they're on the same platform.
Yes.
Right? Now, but you still can distinguish between elder gopis, younger gopis, cowherd boys, cows, trees, right? Jamuna, right? You can tell the difference, right? Yeah, okay. Like that. Otherwise, you know, unless you're from Nazareth, you generally don't, you know, you would find it tough walking across the Jamuna. Right? Like that. No? Yes. Okay. So therefore, then you make distinction. But it's on the transcendental platform. It encourages devotional service. While here, distinction is everybody's on the common platform, that they're here because they want to control and enjoy. Now, to different degrees, they're pious or impious, and to different degrees, they've taken up Krishna consciousness or not. And it's going to be in those 4 categories. Right? So it'll be combined, yes.
Why is it so easy we catch all those, you know, material things that sound so perfect to us?
Because that's what we're looking for, and that's what we've been cultivating for unlimited lifetimes. Right? Because it means devotional service, okay, we're not, you know, there's nothing to enjoy here, you know, you got to control the senses, there's regulation and everything like that. And so, okay, yeah, okay, I can see, is yeah, because the material didn't work, and so, okay, this is like this. But then somebody comes back, you know, they've just somehow or other been enlightened in the New Age thing, and they come, no, no, you shouldn't restrict your senses, let them go, let them experience, let them be, you know, you are who you are, and all like that. And the next thing, the next morning, the temple president finds he's got three devotees left, and everybody else is left. Why? Because that's what the materialistic, mind is looking for. It's looking for an excuse. Yes, you can enjoy. You can be happy in the material world, and then because that's what we want. So yes, you know, the mental speculator. You know, yes, you can analyze. You can know, and then they just disappear. So it's just practice. That's why you have to be very careful who you associate with. So someone who doesn't represent the standard, then you shouldn't associate with them, because otherwise then what will happen is one will get distracted by material desire. Because if they're not the standard, means not the standard means it's not about pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Does that work? So that's why, but if you're there for long enough and people say this, then you see this is bogus. And so you're not interested. So you immediately then disassociate from such persons, like is recommended by Vishwanath and Srila Prabhupada. So then you know, it works out.
When devotees get into that new age stuff, there's so much variety.
Right.
For newcomers, it's beneficial because it might bring them closer.
No, newcomers means before they're newcomers.
Before
yes. Shraddha.
So attractive.
Yes.
Something at least more higher than materialism.
Right.
Mystified.
Right.
Then when we see devotees getting into this, that's the red light that we should use.
That's a red light because then it's a step down. Because it's like this. In other words, if a devotee gets into New Age stuff now, generally means they were never into New Age stuff before. Right? And why are they into it now? Because it's popular in the modern world. But if you were doing New Age before you joined, then why would you be into it? And it didn't give you the taste, but it was better than the grosser stuff. So those who were the New Age were more subtle, refined, had a broader open mind, you know, a more conducive lifestyle for the spiritual understanding. So it made it easier to come to Krishna consciousness. So those who were more gross, then yes, that was less. But it didn't give the taste. That's why you came to Krishna consciousness, right? But if you were just the average person who just did what all the average people did, then you may be affected by that flow, right? Because if you were a New Age when everybody else wasn't into New Age, then that means you are weird. So therefore, you have the habit of doing things weird. So pure devotion is weird. So therefore, you're cool. You're comfortable. Right? Now, as it becomes a popular trend, that means people come with it. It'll be easier to deal with the subtleties and all that. But they're still dissatisfied because they are practicing New Age now. And they're not satisfied. That's why they come to Krishna consciousness. So they won't have a problem. The main problem would be those who, when it wasn't practiced, now they take up the trend and they're trying to fit in and be the, you know, the big yogi or the big this or that. Or because the point is where does New Age come from? It comes from here. You know what I'm saying? But here it's just normal. I mean, every Indian is New Age. You know? But it's so much part of the lifestyle, it's not a fashion. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, therefore, it's not noticed that that's what it is. But that's what it is. So, it's already part of a lifestyle. That means the astrology, the vastu, and this and that. Yeah, it is like that. So, therefore, you know, you go in, you're looking at the apartments. There's 10 apartments available. You look at the one that has a better vastu arrangement. That's in combined with the facility you want. So it's no big deal. It's not, oh, what about this and that? And, you know, it's just a matter of you going. Is the kitchen in the right place? Are the bathrooms in the right place? You know, is the opening the right place? If it's there, then great. If it's not, keep looking. And if nothing else is available, then you pick whatever's the best one. You know? Right? Isn't that what the conclusion is, that eeny, meeny, miny, mo? I know. No? Huh? You know, there's wisdom in these old. Does that make sense? So it's just part of the thing. So it's not a big deal. You know, you're arranging marriage, you look at the charts. It's not a big deal. It's just, you know, do they match? How do they match? What don't they match? What is that? Does that match the nature? Is that, you know, so like that. It's all. It's just part of the thing. Just like you're going to have a program. You discuss the menu. Who's there? What time of the year it is? What time is the program? What's the program for? Then you discuss the menu. Right? So it's not a big deal. But for people who don't cook, now that's a big deal. It's like insanity. Right? The people who cook, okay, yeah, we do this, we do that. You know, and you can change midway. You know, you're going to cook this, and the electricity's not on, so you just switch. You know? Instead of baking it, you boil it. You know, and hey, it works. You know, so, like that. No? So it's just part of... No, it doesn't work like that? Once you open up the thing of connecting things, if you keep it in Krishna conscious, works great. But if it's not, then it goes off into all kinds of funny things.
Pan-fry.
That's after you boil it. Because you can't bake it. So you boil it, then pan-fry it. Right? Yeah, or you can just fry it. Yeah, it depends. If it's a pierogi, you boil it, then fry it. If it's a calzone, you just fry it instead of bake it. Right? Wouldn't boil it. Probably could boil it. It'd be interesting, though. Italian pierogies. Yeah, okay. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments on the same verse as follows. In purified consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one sees the presence of Krishna everywhere. Right? And then we go, yes. And then we get into the technicality, how to do it. Oh, we don't need that. You know, hey, wait, how does that work? If, therefore, one only engages in deity worship in the temple and does not consider other living entities, then he is in the lowest grade of devotional service. One who worships the deity in the temple and does not show respect to others is a devotee on the material platform. So here the lowest means neophyte, right? But it also means they don't have knowledge, so there's the aspect of ignorance, is there? Right? Like that. One who worships the deity in the temple and does not show respect to others is a devotee on the material platform, in the lowest stage of devotional service. A devotee should try to understand everything in relationship with Krishna and try to serve everything in that spirit. To serve everything means to engage everything in the service of Krishna, because it's all Krishna's energies anyway, right? So now if I engage the energy in Krishna's service, what's my position? Right? Whose energy is it? Right. It's not ours. And what does Krishna's energy do? What's the nature of Krishna's energy? To serve Krishna. We're the only energy that doesn't. Even the external potency serves Krishna. Does that make sense? So, in other words, Maya is not in Maya. Right? You understand?
Yes.
So that we're the ones in Maya. So the thing is then we take that energy, which is already serving the Lord, and then we engage it in the Lord's service. So that means we're assisting, we're an instrument. Right? So, but we take it that I am the Lord, so I'm the controller. I've engaged this in Krishna's service. So as a beginning starting point, that's fine. But ultimately, it's not useful. Does that make sense? If a person is innocent and does not know his relationship with Krishna, an advanced devotee should try to engage him in the service of Krishna. One who is advanced in Krishna consciousness can engage not only the living being, but everything in the service of Krishna. So it's not even just the devotee himself, but everything else is connected. See it all in connection with Krishna. Okay, cool. One who worships the deity of Krishna, a deity of Godhead in the temple, but does not know that the Supreme Lord as Paramatma is situated in every living entity's heart, must be in ignorance and is compared to one who offers oblations into ashes. Right? So in other words, that mentality will not get you prema. The point is you should be performing pure devotional service and it should produce prema. But if you're not, then what happens is that it's like this. It's like oblations into ashes. Now, is it saying the oblations are bad? No, it just means the placement of it is wrong. So the devotional activity is not wrong. It's that it's not complete. It has to be placed in the right way. You have to be able to see the Lord. If the deity is special, it's the deity who's sitting in everyone's heart. That's another. If you don't respect everyone as the Lord's energy or as the devotees, then at least the Lord's in everybody's heart. Right? And that respect then is according to their position and their condition. Right? Some sense. Yeah.
So Maharaj, this understanding of Krishna in the heart, the living entity, must be always.
Yes. That is ideal. Or at least that you're dealing with devotees who are devotees of Krishna, and then you're seeing the aspect of Bhagavan.
Yes.
But in any case, it should be you're seeing Krishna, either on the Brahman, Paramat, or Bhagavan platform. But it should be that the goal is Bhagavan.
Yes.
Right. Is that something? Yes. Yes.
Just in the last part, you were reading about Paramatma is situated in everything of his heart.
Yes.
And what does it really mean to understand it? Is it that we'll always remember Krishna from the heart?
Yeah, because then Krishna's there. Because if Krishna's there, then whose heart is he sitting in? There's a living entity there. So then that will change how you deal with them. Right? How it means that you deal with someone nicely because there's some affection or something you want to get of that. You deal with someone not nicely because of your opinions of their feelings towards them. But in all that, generally the soul and the super soul are not count a part of the equation. So if you always remember that, it actually changes how you deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
So is it?
Yeah, it doesn't mean that.
Yeah, it's not that you're sitting there and have the bug eyes or the ones that go like this, you know, like that. You know, it's not a scary movie or something. You know, so then you see and you see Super Soul, you know, everywhere. And everyone's going, how can we looking so bug eyed? I see Super Soul.
It's also more about
Krishna
and following one's intuition.
Intuition. What does the intuition got to do with it? You know what I'm saying? It's not some far out thingy. It's about that the Lord is situated in everyone's heart. It's not that you have to actually see Him there.
Yeah.
You have to know that He's there. So He's there. The soul's there. So that makes a difference in how you'll deal with them. Does that make sense? Because then you're going to look at it. Okay. So in this situation, how would I deal that would be appropriate in Krishna consciousness for the situation? Right? So that's what it changes. So in other words, that point of seeing everything, because the point was is you can see the Lord everywhere. Because it's not, so you see it's his energy. So if it's there, then how is the body functioning? Okay? You're seeing that the super soul. The soul's there. So what are you actually looking at? What am I actually dealing with? I mean, do you find it weird that, okay, let us say you're talking to someone on the phone. Is there a problem? Are they the phone? Right? You know, but their voice comes through the phone. So the phone is the medium that you interact with. You know, it's not that you pick up a carrot or something and start talking to it. Right? Right? You talk to the carrot before you put it in the blender, but you don't use it as a phone. Right? Okay. Yeah. No? So the whole point is you're talking to someone, you're seeing the super soul, and the soul is there. So that means their conditioning is the medium through which the soul is relating to you, and that's how you relate back. It's the medium. Does that make sense? Someone calls on the phone, I don't start typing on my computer. I talk to the phone. Someone starts chatting on the computer, I type on the computer. I don't start talking to it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah? Somebody knocks at the door, then the interaction is going to be connected with the door. You know, you don't start looking in your closet or something. Right?
I also mean that we might be the higher intelligence. Sometimes.
Higher intelligence.
Yeah,
what do you mean by higher intelligence?
Sometimes you're going to say something to somebody, but then it's like this little voice who says, no, don't say that because it'll give you trouble. So then you stop yourself.
Do they have a particular accent or something?
No, it's just like a sense of intelligence, which is kind of giving advice, but don't act like this.
But what is that? No, yes, okay, no, I mean, that's. That is a connected topic, but it's not technically the topic that you asked about. The one you asked about was seeing the Lord in the heart. So it's about how you're going to relate with everything around you. That's the whole point. Now, in dealing with the Lord sitting in your heart, that's another thing. He functions through the intelligence. That's the closest thing to the super soul. But it has to be, it's not so much about the voice, it's what is the voice saying. Because the mind is also a voice. Right? The ego is also a voice. And sometimes they have a pretty good argument. You know what I'm saying? So someone who generally is able to function very, you know, straightforward, get things done efficiently, there's a cooperation between all these functions. And people who can't get anything done, generally it's because they all disagree. Yes, and they put, yeah, if it gets too far, then they put it in special places. Does that make sense? So the whole point is what is the voice saying? Is it based on Shastra? Is it, the, you know, it means, what's the whole point? It means you have the thing, okay, you know, you go there and you come back to your house and the door's open and it's dark inside and you hear noises inside and they don't sound like, you know, the local cat or puppy dog or whatever you might expect to be in there. Like that. So then you might get that voice to say, maybe you shouldn't go in there. Right? So that means that's intelligence, because the point is for protecting oneself and this and that. But you have to be very careful, because otherwise some people take this very seriously and then they get into all kinds of far out things. You know what I'm saying? And especially when they get quite a bit older, you know, then they really like to function on that platform. That's like their claim to fame. You know, so it's you know what I'm saying? So you have to be a little careful. The point is that you function based on Shastra, you think according to Shastra, therefore all these voices will be working according to Shastra, then there's something to work with. Okay? You know, it's not... Does that make sense? Because even the super soul is talking to you, is through the intelligence. Right? Does that make sense? Not, he's directly talking to you. Like that means he wants, he can talk to you directly. But then you'll know. Because it won't be your voice talking. It'll be his voice talking. You know, so the voices you're always used to, those are the ones you work with. Right? If the Lord is talking directly, it'll be his voice. Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to be able to distinguish. Okay? Okay. So, yes. So, the one who doesn't... He doesn't know about the Paramatman, every living... So it's like he's in ignorance. one offers oblations into ashes. So now the oblation should be offered in the proper place, not that oblation should be given up. Oh, if you don't see that, then it's useless. You shouldn't be doing this. No, you should do it properly. Right? In other words, similarly in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.247, it is stated, a devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple, but does not behave properly towards other devotees or people in general, is called a prakriti bhakta, or a materialistic devotee, and is considered to be in the lowest position. Lowest means kanista. Right? So we don't have to worry about, what's his lowest position? No, I mean, we're quite familiar with this lowest position. So it's like, because otherwise we're thinking, from this position it's lower. No, we're already in that position. So then we just, it's up from there. So it's, according to Sridhar Swami.
It's more advanced than a non-devotee.
Sorry?
Kanista degree is quite more advanced than a non-devotee.
Than a non-devotee, yes. But at the same time, as compared to prema, it's the beginning stage. It's just a very, glimmer like that. But the point is it's in the right direction. But what's pointing out here is if one isn't aware of these things, how one's going to move forward? Because the Madhyama can define devotees and non-devotees, and who to respect, who to make friends with, and who to be kind to. Right? While the neophyte has trouble seeing all that, because they'll have the tendency is that the secondary attributes are the devotional service exclusively. And so if they find a fault in that those external attributes, then they don't see devotion. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. And then that makes it worse that if the person has a tendency to see emotions and all that as not important, so you neither have the spiritual vision from the personal platform nor the material vision from the personal platform. So you end up with somebody quite dry. Or they see on the material platform but can't see on the spiritual platform. So they can't see when somebody's spiritually endeavor, they just see that somebody material is endeavor, and why can't we appreciate that? You know what I'm saying? So the material becomes the qualification. So this confusion, this is the devotee on the lowest platform. So if we can see the super soul, then that means we have the knowledge to understand. Right? Like that. Yes.
Can we say that this prakriti bhakta is called a prakriti because he sees the form and not the newness?
Yes, you could say that, yeah. It means their interest is in material nature, their application is material nature. It's ultimately connected to Krishna, and what they're doing, because it's connected to parampara, is spiritualized. But it's spiritualized to that degree that they are able to appreciate the glory of the process of the devotees, the Lord. You know what I'm saying? A drop of water is there, it is water. And then there's a stream, and then there's the example is given of the Ganga. So even here, it's quite big. But as it flows, generally it's talking about flowing into the ocean. So have you ever been down at the Sagar? There, it's like, I don't know how far apart it is. It's like, it could be easily 1.5-2 kilometers wide, if not more. So there's nothing going to stop that from flowing into the ocean. Because it's here, we can put up a dam. Nobody puts a dam. Does anybody put a dam at the mouth of a river? No, they don't even bother trying, right? So there's no obstacle. Nothing can stop. So that's the point, is that it's just natural. But, so that's what we're trying to get to, but we're happy to start with a drop. and even in some cases a fraction of a portion of a drop. If that drop is prema, we'll take it. Does that make sense? Okay. According to Sridhar Swami, quote, such a devotee does not behave well with the devotees and even with other people. They just don't behave properly anyway. Prakriti means new or unrefined in nature. So here this is the definition, is new or unrefined. So it's not developed. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in Bhakti Sundarbha that such a neophyte devotee will eventually get the result of his devotional service, but he will not get it immediately. This will be explained in these words, right? So, by practicing, the neophyte is going to get the results, but it won't come quickly. It'll take time. So the more one advances, the quicker the results are coming. Right? So then we can understand is that Mother Jashoda and her activity and the results are simultaneous. Or it may even be, you know, the ultimate perfection. She does the activity today, but she already got the benefit yesterday. Right? So that would be. Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-25. Performing his prescribed duties, one should worship the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead until one realizes my presence in his heart and in the hearts of other living entities as well. So the whole point is up to that point you have to worship the deity. Because otherwise, how are you going to move forward? Because worshiping the deity is means it's the whole package. It's not just I do some puja at my house. It's the getting up in the morning, you know, how you deal, you know, offering obeisances to the spiritual master, you know, fixing the bed, taking bath, brushing teeth, doing all those kind of things, dressing, putting tilak, going to the temple, you know, chanting Gayatri, Mangalarti, chanting Japa, Darshanarti, hearing the Bhagavatam, worship of the spiritual master, or worship of the deity if you're involved there, and that Darshan, circumambulation, Charinamrita, accepting Mahaprasad, you know, doing act services and activities for the deity. Does that make sense? That's worship of the deity. Like that. Now, if in that your service is the puja for the deity, then that's nice. Right? But if not, if it's doing some management or the accounts or some other service, then that's what you're doing for the deity. It's the deity's place. Right? Yes?
But now, when we do deity worship, means it is considered a direct service.
Means you're interacting directly, but it's through the parampara, yes, through guru. Because otherwise, we don't have it. In other words, the service is direct, but our relationship is never direct. Like that. You're dressing the deity, but you're dressing as the assistant to those who are responsible for dressing the deities. So it's not that I'm dressing the deities, I'm the servant of those who dress the deities. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it works out nicely. So but once one comes to this point, then if one does do deity worship, one sees the whole thing and it works very nicely. But generally at that point, then if you put more focus on teaching, preaching and all that, then that's recommended. But until that time, then there should be that structured process of deity worship. Right? Because in preaching it may be less structured. That's why it's not mentioned as such there, but you're still preaching on behalf of the deity. Right? You're still following the basic principles, but it may not have as much regulated form as when you're doing deity worship. Right? Does that make sense? Because without that form, one gets distracted. Because when Prabhupada started, he didn't start with that much regulation. He started with the lifestyle of the Madhyamadikar, the preacher. And basically it was like that until 1970. Then he understood it's not enough. They're not regulated enough. They're not learning enough. They're not developing the qualities enough. Therefore, he introduced the Pancharatrik lifestyle, full lifestyle. You know, the whole deity worship process. Otherwise, before that, it was less. You know what I'm saying? The main elements are there, but it was about preaching. So you adjusted for the preaching. You know, there was no laziness, you just adjusted for the preaching. Does that make sense? Yeah. But that takes more maturity to be able to see what to do. Does that make sense? Yes, and purification. So there's more knowledge, more detachment, more attachment to Krishna. Right? more practice, so then it works more nicely. But as a general rule, it's not that they have any problem. If they're not doing it, then they go back into the temple lifestyle and function quite happily. Is that a simple sense?
It's a good combination.
Yes, yeah, it's a good combination. Yeah.
The devotees who have jobs, you know, they kind of spend the majority of their time doing something not related, and they're, how much they're listening, I don't know. Just I'm curious about their advancement and the level of how much effort they put into their Krishna consciousness. It seems to be slow.
Can be, it doesn't have to be, just like, means just let's approach it from a slightly different angle. Okay? Now, okay, person has a job. Okay, we have the morning program. Everybody else is in the morning program, right? Then they spend time with the family in the evening and go to sleep. Okay? The others are doing that. So what's the difference is that 8 hours in the day, you know, the 9 to 5 aspect. Does that make sense? Yes, so in other words, only a third of the day is spent in a way that's less connected.
Just thinking about the influence.
No, that's another thing. But first see what's there. Yes, yeah. So in other words, because otherwise it's generally tends to be thought of as that, oh, but we have job, we have this, so it's all like that. No, but it's only 8 hours. It's not more. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that's another thing. But the point is one has to consider all that.
My point is that if you really study, you put effort into this, and you understand, and you try to develop.
Yes, but that's what you do with the other 16 hours. That's what the other 16 hours are for. But the tendency is that if these 8 hours are spent on a job, then therefore the other 16 I don't have to be so attentive. But the point is you know, it means it's just like this. Let's say you have a full-time temple devotee, okay? Now, he's at the same morning program. He's doing the same basic things in the evening. He's sleeping also, right? They're taking bath, they're blowing the nose, all this kind of stuff. So that means basically between breakfast and the evening, then they just do activities connected with the temple while someone else will do something else. So technically, one can be as involved as they are in those 16 hours, not in the 24. But the tendency is, oh, we're this, and then you let everything slide. Does that make sense? So it's not that they couldn't be, because if you have the proper training and knowledge, then you understand what's the lifestyle, how you're doing, what's the family members, why you're doing these things. Because those 8 hours is so you can maintain those 16. Because if the job has another purpose than that, then what's the meaning? So if it doesn't give you facilities so you can attend the morning program, spend quality time with the family, and get a good night's sleep, then what's the point of it?
To stay in temple.
Sorry?
Better to stay in temple.
Hey. Does that make sense? And then somebody says, no, but everybody can stay in the temple, but very few can understand that. So therefore, you still won't have a problem. Does that make sense? So that was Prabhupada's idea of having the guest facilities. The guest facilities means then they'll come here and follow the lifestyle that the devotees do and get that benefit, get inspired and all that. And then after that, go back to Calcutta or wherever they're from and then, like that. This idea is no, but it's like, because they just... It's the desire for independence, the desire. So, yeah. Okay. In other words, Persons who profess to belong to some religious sect who do not feel the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every living entity and everywhere else are in the mode of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. Right? Because that's the whole point of the religious principles, is to come to this understanding. If, without this preliminary knowledge of the Lord's omnipresence, right, this is preliminary knowledge, because, you know, rasa, now that's something solid. This is just preliminary. Brahman and Paramatma is preliminary knowledge. That's why we're getting it here in third canto, right? Tenth canto, now that's solid. Right? One simply attaches himself to the rituals in a temple, church, or mosque. It is as if he were offering butter into ashes rather than into the fire. One offers sacrifices by pouring clarified butter into a fire and chanting Vedic mantras. But even if there are Vedic mantras and all conditions are favorable, if the clarified butter is poured on ashes, then such a sacrifice will be useless. In other words, a devotee should not ignore any living entity. The devotee must know that in every living entity, however insignificant he may be, even in an ant, God is present. And therefore, every living entity should be kindly treated and should not be subjected to any violence. In modern civilized society, slaughterhouses are regularly maintained and supported by a certain type of religious principle. But without knowledge of the presence of God in every living entity, any so-called advancement of human civilization, either spiritual or material, is to be understood as being in the mode of ignorance. Right, so it's just they learn to refine the mode of ignorance. Right?
Yes.
Like, you know, it's just if I, you know, stick the stuff in a bathtub out in the backyard and leave it there for 2 weeks, you know, then it's not very sophisticated. But if I stick it in, you know, a specially made oaken cask and then let it sit there for 12 years, then now it's sophisticated. Same ignorance, just a little bit more sophisticated. Does that make sense? Right. One who offers me respect but is envious of the bodies of others, right? Because you can't be envious of the soul. Right? And is therefore a separatist, never attains peace of mind because of his inimical behavior towards other living entities. So this separatist means you don't see God connected with everything. You don't see things in relationship to Krishna. That's what the separatist means. Right? So we're looking at it, you know, this person has done this to me, therefore they're my enemy. That's a separatist, because who's this you and who's this them? Right? And where does God fit into it? Except for he's the one that's supposed to destroy them, right? Okay, yeah, okay. He's got a spot in there somewhere, right? So,
what's the hope?
What's the hope?
Yeah, because it's kind of a bit depressing, cutting close to the bone.
Yeah, cutting close to the bone. Well, so then it's...
After so many years?
No, but the point is what did it probably say before? It will be slow. Right here. Jiva Goswami writes in his Bhakti Sandarbha that such a neophyte devotee will eventually get the result of his devotional service. So that's the inspiring part. But he will not get it immediately. Yes, so then the point is now we're learning about it. Now you know what to do to speed the process up. But the point is how did one come to this? Because like we said, these points have been heard in Bhagavatam class again and again and again.
And we tend to forget because they are not present.
Yes, but now it's, how you say, right between the eyes. So we have to pay attention. But the point is why is it, the others, it doesn't, but you don't think about it. But now you're thinking about it. So why is that? That's the result of the devotional service. So you should look at it as, it's just like this, okay, the example is given of Utsamayi, right? That the child goes to the school, goes to the class, comes back the first day, he knows ABC. So in his mind, he's a great scholar, right? And his mother is praising him, you know, this is perfection of the world. Okay? So, is he? No. But it's a good start, it's a good direction, it's good, you know, like that. But the more he learns, the more he understands he doesn't know. So generally those who are the best in a subject matter, they're the ones who know that they know the least. Right? But they're able to function nicely, get very good results, and they're very inspired because then they see how much is there and it's... You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It's just like, we say, no, but the vastness, but it's just like this. Okay, we have the swimming pool, and we put a wave machine down at one end. Okay? And so we get out our surfboard, we're inspired. Okay? But now if you're out on the ocean, and you have, now wouldn't that be better? So the more we understand is there, the more we appreciate. Right? So it's not volume. So it's not a matter of, I just figured out I'm not the controller and enjoyer, so this is a real bummer, right? So now, the point is now it's that the spiritual world is unlimited and it works so nicely and everybody's so happy there, so it can't be a bad thing. Right? But in other words, what we hear, I'm not the controller and enjoyer. And then we look at it and that it's overwhelming, but then when we go back, then we're able to cut it all down to, you know, our, you know, the little whatever is our lifestyle, and then we can feel comfortable and control and enjoy. Well, if I ask, will you control the whole world? No, only this much. Does that make sense? So it's not that you, so that's all you have to deal with anyways. But the difference is, instead of controlling it, you're serving it. Does that make sense? So instead of controlling money, you're serving money. Or controlling administration, you're serving it. And so then you're part of something greater. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, what, it's not a problem being part of a, you know, how you say, cosmic, you know, how you say, association. Unlimited members. You know, and the amazing thing is nobody gets lost. You know, everybody's not sure. So that makes sense. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada highlights the significance of the phrases bhuteshu baddha vairasya, inimical towards others. In other words, it's the knowledge that is disturbing. But the point is what's the next stage? How to apply this. Right? That's the inspiring thing. So, okay, if this is the thing, and people, this is the process, and they become God conscious by this, so then it's a good thing. So now how to apply it? How to understand?
No, the struggling part is up to 20 years. It's still
But, okay, look at it. How long is a life of Brahma? Okay? Okay. Okay. Yeah, it stands to 20 years. It's not a big deal. You know, think of it this. Better you figure this out after 20 than 40. You know? Right? Yeah, so. The point is the result of 20 years is now you figure it out. No? Not good?
Maybe it's not just 20 years. Maybe computer is like
that. Oh, that's another thing. That you'd also don't know. Point is, if someone has Shraddha, it means it's not happened just this. It's fructified this life, but it's not from only activities of this life. It's happened over many, many lifetimes. So we've come in contact for a long time, and then now it's fructified. But having come to that point of Shraddha, you can go back to Godhead in one life. Right? So many times it's taken, it takes many, many lifetimes. That's many, many lifetimes to get to here. And then you can finish it in one life. Or you can take many, many as you please. It's up to you. You know. So that makes sense. So that's why it's pointing out these things. Is that, it should be real. Right? Just like someone's doing the moonwalk. It looks like they're walking, but they're going backwards. They're not going forward. Right? So it looks like they're doing devotional service, but it's like it's being the oblations are poured into the ashes. Because they're not careful about it. They're not, the knowledge is not being applied. They're not dealing properly with devotees. It's not about pleasing the Lord. So these are simple things that every devotee knows and can do. Otherwise, why did one take up the process if one wasn't seeing the ability to do it and the result coming from doing it? Right? It's just that one gets distracted. Right? Because the application is performed through the secondary activities. But if in the process of focusing on the secondary you forget the primary, then it's again oblations and ashes. But if you remember the primary, then it's there. So in other words, one thinks that it's the secondary is the devotional service. And now you figure out, no, the primary is the devotional service, the secondary is the medium. So that's quite a great step forward. Right? Wasn't that the... Somebody, was it? Mao or something? The great step forward? Or the great leap forward? Or... Oh, of course, then there's the one step for man, you know, the whatever it is for mankind, and there's something for mankind. Yes, often. So the point is that that's where it gets serious. No? Yeah.
So now, by studying that this knowledge and applying,
yeah, that's the thing, is that if we apply it like it's automatic. So it's not the soul. Any soul can do it. So generally, why we tend to speak in a more like what do you call it, close, cutting close to the bone technique, is that generally one's dealing with opposition. If we were dealing with, yes, let's do this, then the approach could be quite different. You know what I'm saying? But just as one travels around the world, you generally find that, you know, it's the, you know, that there's always some excuse why it's something else, you know. You know, it's always like that. No, but we have a job, we have this, we have that, we have so many things. Yes, and so, yeah. So, you know. Why don't they mention their gallbladder or something? You know, it's like that. Why it's always the job? Why not I got a gallbladder so I can't be Krishna conscious? You know. I got a corn on my big toe. You know what I'm saying? Huh? You know corn? You know when you wear shoes and you get kind of a callus that kind of goes inside instead of on the top, then it's called corn. I think there's a fancy name for it, something with a B or something. No? Okay. But whatever it is, you know, so why that? Or, you know, I have a head. I can't be Krishna conscious. Well, I got 10 fingers. Well, how can I be Krishna conscious? You know, so that's the whole thing. It's always that when I say, I have a job, or I have a family, or I have a responsibility, then I say, oh, of course not. Yeah, you don't have to try very hard. You know, everybody's got to see it. You know, so that's the whole thing, is that there's always an excuse. And as soon as we say there's no excuse, then it's about, okay, now what do I do? What can I do? Then everything's positive. It only looks negative when we're, you know, trying to go the opposite direction. But as soon as then we see, okay, then we move forward. Then it.
But then the difficulty is to be responsible, to take responsibility.
Yes, yes. Then it works more smoothly. So that's also, then you see, is that it goes back and forth between giving the technique and these things, and then the inspiring pastimes, and then like this and that. right? So, yeah.
Say that when we advance, we always are on that level, but as far as I see, my own spiritual life goes back and forth. I fall back, my muscle fall back.
Yeah, but that's part of the process. But is it in everything it's like that, or in certain areas?
Sometimes I'm very much absorbed and there are no distractions.
That's okay, but the point is we're talking, there's so many aspects of devotional service, so many aspects of your life, is that they're in everything. You know, sometimes you can brush your teeth properly, sometimes you can't. You know, like that, or, you know what I'm saying?
Maybe in certain areas.
Yes, so the whole point is the areas that are steady means it's gone past that. The areas where that's there, that means it's at an earlier stage. So that means there was some other anarthas there, or it's a new aspect in your devotional practice, or you know, you were unaware of it, or not interested in it, or something that it was, it's later to develop. So according to conditioning, we might find certain areas are very easy to do. You know, just like, yeah, just for an example, let's say someone who is a musician or into music, then sitting in a kirtan all day is easy for them. You know what I'm saying? While someone else who, you know, does it, then they have problem. Does that make sense? You know, so that's theirs. You have to see what works. So the point is that's the next stage. You're noticing it because before that was, you know, great enthusiasm and this is it and we're on the top of the world and we're, you know, advanced and everything like that. That was what was before that. So now you've advanced further, so now it's one day it's nice and one day it's back. Right? So every activity goes through those six stages of anartha. Of anartha, it's just how long is spent on each, you know, and like that. So some things maybe quickly go through, some things slowly, some things, you know, so one place it gets stuck for longer, you know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, this whole yukta vairagya, that's the third level. Where it's like, you know, no, but we could do this, we could connect this, even, you know, it's generally, it's how so I could connect that to Krishna and all that, but at the same time as then there's the aspect, we have to, you know, give everything to Krishna, the renounced aspect, and, you know, that's just, no, but, you know, you can also, it's like, I have all these desires, I can use them all for Krishna, but it should be about Krishna, that's the third level. So, yeah. So, then the whole idea is that, I mean, it's not something to be worried about. It's a matter of, okay, that's at this stage. Just like, let's say, the pot's on the fire, you open the pot, and the water, there are no bubbles in the water. So, what stage are we at? Not boiling yet. But it's ahead of, I walk in the kitchen, and there's nothing on the fire, and I have to look for the pot, and you know, and I find the pot, but it's in the sink and it's dirty, I gotta wash it, and then, you know, I put the pot and I put it on the fire, then I have to look for the little, you know, the little thing that makes the fire work, and then finally I got it there, and now it's okay. I look in the water and the rice is there, and it's boiling, but individually kind of moving around separately. What does that mean? More cooked, but still not there. I look into the pot and the rice is all stuck together and there's little holes and steam coming out. So what does that mean? Rice is done. Right? So all it is that you look at it and see, okay, this is where I'm at, so this is what's to do. So therefore, if it's sometimes it goes really well, sometimes it's not. When it's going well, be happy. When it's not, then try to figure out what to do to make it work smoothly. But it's about not about it smoothly, it's about the Krishna consciousness. That's the thing that you want to make steady. The activities will come on their own, because it may be an area you're not very good at. You don't have this technical skill. You know, somebody else, you know, just they just open their mouth and amazing kirtans come out, so, you know, like that. We open our mouth and everybody starts looking at their watch, you know, like that. I remember one, you know, same kind of thing. We don't have the full audience for it to appreciate, but I remember one devotee came in, that they're in the temple. I walked into the temple, and, you know, and they're just about to blow the conch, and somebody came up to me in this desperation, said, "Sing!" You know, and I generally, when I go to a temple the first time, I first see what happens, because I don't know how they learn, because different places you go, they sing differently, and if you sing in one, like, what? How you sing? Like, who does like that? You know, so I generally, the first, I don't sing, and because they saw I was reluctant, and it was a lady, she just started singing the Mangal Arati, and she wasn't very good, but the point was, is it was better than the alternative. Because there was a devotee who'd go every day and sing every day, and the devotees were freaking out. So it was just anybody should sing except that devotee. You know, it was off key, it was this, it was just like, you know, no one could, you couldn't play, you just couldn't do anything with it. But they were happy, they were, you know, it doesn't mean it wasn't devotional, it was just, it was nice that if everybody else could take part in the devotional, you know, process. You know what I'm saying? So, you have that, that it maybe it's not, but that doesn't mean that the devotion won't develop, but the technique may not. Like somebody cooks, and it's very devotional, they may not be a very technical cook. Some others are very technical, but there's, you know, no real flavor. Does that make sense? You know, so like that, you have. So don't worry about the steadiness in the devotion. Focus on that, and then do your best in the technique. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of moving forward. It's not a matter of freaking out. So when you figure out where you're at, the point is that, okay, now we know where we're at, now we continue from there. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter. It's not a matter how much time it took. It's a matter of that it's happened. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, does the person, he's been investing, we're giving a very general, a conceptual idea, and we're not connecting it, how you say, if it has any connection to anyone, it is purely by coincidence. Okay? So, if you've invested in something, let's say, for example, some economic endeavor for 20 years, right? We're just using 20 as an offhand number. Could be 19, it could be 21, it could be 20 and a half, 20 and 3 months, you know, I say 1 week, 3 days, 5 hours, 7 minutes, and 7 seconds, right? You know, so whatever. So it's just arbitrary number here, right? So and then from that endeavor, suddenly you got a return of, you know, millions of dollars. Now, would you lament that, you know, it took 20 years to get these millions of dollars? No, you'd just be happy with the millions of dollars. So therefore... But then you don't enjoy the money. You have the money. Okay, so then it's a cultural thing. It's, okay. It's a cultural thing. Okay, then that's fine. No, then you go ahead. Lament all you like. Just as long as after having that period of lamentation and one is satisfied, then one applies oneself and moves forward. Okay? Does that make sense? So that's the point. When you figure it out, then that's the good moment. You don't worry about the past, because you can say it's 20 years, but we could look at it. We've been here unlimited lifetimes and all that, you know, so. And now finally we figured it out. So 20 years is good. Right? Right? So look at this. It means, as Brahma, with the amount of brains he has and the lifetime he has, we in that form did not figure it out. Right? But now here we are, you know, Kali Yuga, you know, on this planet, you know, the eighth planetary system, and now we figured it out. And it took us 20 years. Not bad. Right? You know, you put a little gold star on you. Yeah, on your little devotional development card, you put a gold star, right? Does that work? Does that work? Huh? Okay. Okay, so in this case, okay, time's up. So we'll stop it.